Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network today. Well, it's scarier than standing at the edge of a cliff, getting a letter from the Internal Revenue Service, a lot of other things. For about three-quarters of us, speaking in public is our greatest fear. Why is that? Most of us, at some point during our lives, will have to do some kind of public performance, whether it's standing up in front of a group, giving testimony at a hearing, doing a sales presentation, making a presentation to your coworkers. There's going to be some time when you have to say a few words in public, and it scares us half to death. So how can we conquer that fear and make effective speeches and presentation? Well, we'll find out this hour as we visit with Sims Wyeth, president of Sims Wyeth & Company, an executive development firm devoted to the art and science of influence and persuasion. Sims Wyeth is the author of the book, The Essentials of Persuasive Public Speaking. Sims Wyeth, welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
Thank you very much, John. Nice to be here.
Well, I appreciate you being with me on the show this morning. I had to smile when I saw the topic list for today, because I started teaching public speaking at the university level in 1984. So this is familiar ground. What is it about public speaking that scares us so badly?
Well, I think it's the fear, number one, of being judged, living up to our own expectations for ourselves. It's also the fear of fear. In other words, we do get nervous, and then we get nervous about being nervous. So it's a very complex thing to deal with.
Yeah, it always surprises me when I read this statistic, and it really hasn't changed over time. I mean, it's been listed as the number one fear for most of us for a long while. Why is it so important that that we are good at public speaking? Why is this such an essential skill?
Well, if you can shine in front of a large group of people, you're going to win their esteem, their trust, their loyalty. You might get promoted. You might make more money. And it's a kind of self-mastery, mastering the ability to do that. Christopher Hitchens, who was a wonderful journalist, said that if you can give a good speech, you need never dine or sleep alone. So there are many benefits to being a good speaker.
Well, a very good friend of mine and a former university chancellor had a famous dictum that said, no speech too short, no gift too large. Sometimes we get in trouble when we go on too long.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, you don't want to talk longer than the audience is listening.
So where are public speaking skills useful? Things that we might not necessarily think of right off the bat. I mean, when we hear public speaking as a term, we might think, well, I'm going to be up in front of a big group of people delivering prepared remarks. But where are some aspects or where are some occasions where these skills would come in handy that we wouldn't ordinarily think of?
Well, I think they're applicable almost around the 360-degree clock of life. First of all, there is just thinking clearly and organizing your thoughts clearly so that others can follow you and understand you. There's developing the courage to speak up for what you believe and what you say, having confidence and learning how to speak so that other people listen. I think that's a big deal. Also, if you can do that, you can be more interesting when you speak. And I know my wife often talks about how her mother saved her high school career by, screwing up her courage and going into the principal's office and defending her daughter. And she worked on what she was going to say to the principal to help her daughter get through high school. So that's another example of somebody who's using speaking techniques to not necessarily in public speaking, but in private speaking.
We're often not very good at public speaking. We don't think about it formally very much. Why are so many of us lacking in these skills?
Well, number one, we don't do it that often. I mean, if we had to do it every single day, we would probably be a lot better at it. If our school system encouraged us to do it every single day, we would be better at it. In the 19th century, everyone who went to college had to learn how to craft an effective speech and deliver it well, and that is no longer the case. And it's, you know, we're not accustomed to standing up in front of groups and bringing our strengths and our ideas out in an effective way. It's just we don't do it that often. I think that's the main issue.
Mm-hmm. Do you think part of it could be that most of us think, well, because I can make I can open my mouth and make sounds come out, that, you know, what's the big deal about learning how to be a public speaker?
Yeah, I know. It's we talk all the time in real life, but when we get up in front of a crowd, our I would say extemporaneous speaking is not built to really hold the attention of a large group of people over an extended period of time. We need a disciplined form in order to be able to follow it as listeners.
So what are the most important parts of a presentation or speech? The beginning, the end, the middle? What's the most important part?
Well, Winston Churchill was a pretty good speaker, and he said that in order to make a good speech, you need to have a good, strong beginning and a dynamic ending, and you need to put those two things as close together as possible. So I would agree with your premise that the beginning and the ending are the most important part, because you capture attention with a good opening, and you usually tend to want to circle back to your opening when you get to the end.
Huey Long, the famous Louisiana politician, was often asked about his public speaking prowess. How do you do it? And he said, well, first, I tell him what I'm going to tell him. Then I tell him. Then I tell him what I told him.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's a very old technique. And I think the military uses that as well in educating soldiers. And I think it's a useful technique. It's not all that dramatic. It's kind of didactic and maybe a little predictable and boring, but it is an effective tool.
Well, then how do we take that basic tool? I mean, it's the same thing for writing an essay or a book report or whatever. You have a beginning, a middle, and an end. How do we take that? How do we inject the drama into that?
Well, I think that all drama is about people who have problems. And the plot of every story we read or movie we see or book we read, a TV show we watch, it's all about people who have a problem and they're struggling to fix the problem. And that is what drama is all about. How do human beings cope with the vicissitudes of life? So if you're giving a speech and you want to make it more dramatic, I would begin by exploring the problem that the audience needs to solve or wants to solve, and then offer your ideas or information as a solution to the problem that the audience is trying to solve.
So we got trouble right here in River City.
Correct. Right.
And
right.
We need. And,
you know, I often think of the Gettysburg Address as, you know, a perfect example of that. Abraham Lincoln summarizes, 87 years of American history in the first sentence of his speech, 47 years ago. And then the very next sentence is, now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. So immediately he stated the overwhelming problem that the country faces, and he moves on to ask the question, what can we possibly do or say here? And then he offers a solution at the end.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to rededicate ourselves to the values that we say we cherish.
I'd like to offer our listeners a chance to get in on the conversation here this morning. We're talking about public speaking. It's something that 75% of us say we're just scared to death of it. Why are we so afraid of it? That's one of the things we're talking about this hour. Are you afraid of public speaking? Do you have to give presentations anyway? And how do you get through it? And what advice would you like for improving your performance? Well, you can contact us this morning, and we'll talk about those things coming up. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number to call to join the program. 800-642-1234. Email also works, talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And you can find The Joy Cardine Show on Facebook and leave your comment or question there. Talking with Sims Wyeth this morning, author of the book, The Essentials of Persuasive Public Speaking. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the common pitfalls, some of the common mistakes that most people make, and maybe how we can avoid those. And we'll take your calls as well here on the Ideas Network. Again, 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. This morning, we're talking about public speaking, something that we're all afraid of. My guest is Sims Wyeth, president of Sims Wyeth & Company, an executive development firm devoted to the art and science of influence and persuasion. He's written a book titled The Essentials of Persuasive Public Speaking, and that has formed the basis of our discussion this morning. 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or find the Joy Cardine program on Facebook. Get in touch and ask your question. So, what are some of the common pitfalls in public speaking? And some of them are just bad habits, maybe even verbal tics we all have. But what are some of the things that most people do wrong, and how can we avoid doing them?
Well, let's see. I think one of the first things we need to we tend to forget is that we need to make a very clear point in our speech, because people don't want to track, I would say, unfocused speech. So I think the first thing is to make sure that you have you know exactly what you're trying to say and why you're saying it. I think we need a good structure or flow in our talk so that the audience can easily remember it. You know, when you go to a supermarket, you get 36 items perhaps, but you put them all into three bags. And very often people say it's very important to just to make three major points in a talk. So we need a good flow there. And also we need to pitch our ideas to that particular audience to connect with them on their level. So we need to say that we need to have a clear audience benefit, and often we forget that as well. And then in my business, I work with a lot of business people who have a lot of research or scientific data to report, and they're very often too long and too detailed. So those are some of the things that I see day in and day out.
Well, we do live in an age that's dominated by almost too much information. I mean, we've got we have tremendous computing power at our fingertips just on our smartphone, and we have access to all sorts of data, a lot of it very boring. But sometimes it needs to be presented. So let's say that I'm doing a presentation, and it requires that I take some quite a bit of data and communicate it. What are some things that I could do to make that less dry and boring?
Well, I think number one is make sure that you're giving the audience a top-line awareness of the meaning of the data and the meaning of all this information before you drag them through the details, so that they have the big picture and then can get the satisfaction of seeing that your assertion of the big picture is proven by the underlying data. I think that is the most important thing that you can do in that situation.
Even if we're all prepared, we've done our homework, we've written out our speech, we've got it all organized, we have whatever visual aids we're going to be using, we've practiced with them, and we're really prepared, we've done everything right. But sometimes nerves kick in anyway, and they can really mess us up. How can we channel that nervous energy in a positive way and not let it mess us up?
Well, yeah, in other words, I think that 80% of the job of being a good public speaker happens off stage, right? And it's about building your argument, finding the right language and the right data and the right supporting stories and anecdotes to bring the material to life, and then rehearsing as much as you possibly can so that you can get away from the PowerPoint slides or the text. And then there's the stepping out on the stage, which is the last 20% of it. And I think the big issue there is the need to rehearse under performance-like pressure. There's quite a bit of research done on the psychology of peak performance. And the only proven, scientifically proven method for not choking, not getting derailed by your anxiety is what the professional football players do before they play in the Super Bowl. They rehearse under performance-like pressure. And that what's what that does for you is it gets you acclimated to the experience of speaking in front of a group.
So how would we do that?
You would call a friend in and say, I'm going to give a speech. Would you please listen to me? And call maybe a bunch of people in and say, I've been working on this presentation for a week now. It's coming up. Will you please come in and listen to me and give me some feedback? That's the best thing you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because so whether it's giving a speech at the local Rotary Club at lunch or doing a presentation for the board of directors of a company, you've got an audience to talk to. It's often suggested that we're supposed to imagine them all in their underwear. does that even work? I don't even want to imagine that. But
Right. I think you're devoting a portion of your mind to imagining something that is irrelevant at that point. I think you should rehearse as much as you can and then put yourself out on stage and enjoy the experience of helping people, of educating people, of informing them. That's what I would say.
Well, you mentioned enjoy, and I think for a lot of people they're scratching their heads and going, wait a minute, I'm going to enjoy getting up and giving a presentation, but it can be a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a real high if you do it well, and you you have to find your own way into the material that you have, and articulate it and personalize it so that it feels like it's coming from your gut, and you like it, and you trust the information that you're giving, and people seem to nod at you and smile at you while you're talking. It's very gratifying if you do it well.
Well, you talk about people smiling and nodding at you. You do get some feedback from the audience if you happen to look at them. I know that one of the things over time that I've noticed my own public speaking students failing at miserably is eye contact. How important is it to actually connect with the audience visually?
It's hugely important, not just for you, but for the audience as well. I mean, there are three kinds of eye contact in human behavior: passive, assertive, and aggressive. And we certainly don't want to have passive eye contact when we are trying to get people to listen to us and believe in us. And nor do we want to have aggressive eye contact, which is threatening and hostile.
Well, could you give some examples of passive eye contact?
Sure. Staring at the floor, glancing off into space, burying your face in your notes, turning your back on the audience and reading text from PowerPoint slides. I would say those are examples of people who are not willing to connect with a live human being about what they're speaking about. You know yourself, John, that when you really want to say something to your loved one or your friend, and you've got some emotional conviction behind it, you look them right in the eye. You look them right in the eye, and you watch their face to see if they are listening to you and if they are accepting what you're saying. And you get a lot of information as a speaker from watching the face of the person you're listening to.
Well, we make judgments about whether someone is telling the truth or not by how whether they look us in the eye or not.
Yep, that's true. I don't know if that's always an accurate way of judging the truth. There are some people who are very skilled at lying and looking you right in the eye. But
well, what's aggressive eye contact, and why shouldn't we be aggressive?
Well, because you're going to dominating an audience is not a good thing to do. Trying to boss people around, so I would say, aggressive eye contact is getting closer, stepping up closer to people, looking them right in the eye. And, of course, there's the context of the environment in which this is happening. That we have to define that. But aggressive eye contact is sustained hostile attention at somebody, and we certainly don't want to do that.
And, of course, during the course of a performance, we may have to kind of change what we're doing in our nonverbals or our approach based on what we're getting back from the audience. Maybe they're not responding to something, or they're responding really well to something, and we want to keep doing it.
Yes, and that's when the monologue of presenting or speaking actually becomes a dialogue. When you look at the audience and you see what's happening, and you are able to respond, shift gears, move on to a different topic, do something to let the audience know that you see what's happening and you're responding in the moment to what is happening between you and your listeners.
So what's your preference for people to use when delivering a speech, a manuscript or some notes on a note card?
Well, I would like to see people as free as they can possibly get from the written word. Note cards, I had a terrible experience as a young person giving a speech where I had all my note cards in my hand. I got up to the front of the room. I had scribbled or in tiny handwriting all over the note cards. I hadn't numbered them.
Uh-oh.
I had written on the front and the back, and I tripped over the podium on, you know, the stage on the floor, and they all fell to the ground, and they were completely out of order, and I probably couldn't have read them anyway because my writing was so small.
We're going to go to the news, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Sims Wyeth about public speaking and take your calls at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The news is next. Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. We're talking about public speaking this hour. It's something that 3/4 of us list as our greatest fear. Why is that? Well, we've been talking about that this hour and ways that we can overcome it. With Sims Wyeth, president of Sims Wyeth & Company, an executive development firm devoted to the art and science of influence and persuasion. Sims Wyeth is the author of The Essentials of Persuasive Public Speaking. Well, we had a caller who couldn't hang on, Herb from Plainfield, who wanted to ask, what is a good technique for breaking the ice? You mentioned that the introduction to the speech was one of the really key elements. So how do we break the ice with the audience and engage them?
Well, let's see. One simple way that I like is to try to state the recent history of the issue that you happen to be addressing, whether you're talking about, as Abraham Lincoln was, the last 87 years of our country's life, right? The previous 87 years, 87 years ago, said talking about that very briefly, and then moving on to the challenge or the issue or the problem or the opportunity that the speaker wants to speak about. That's one way.
What about humor? A lot of people think that, the best way to break the ice is to tell a joke.
Well, if I often say to my clients as they sit around the conference room table, if you've ever been paid to tell a joke, raise your hand. And nobody ever raises their hand. So I say, leave it to the professionals. You know, telling a joke at the beginning is a very risky business because if it flops, your nerves are going to go way up and the audience is not going to think of you in a flattering light.
Mm-hmm. So what can we do to make our presentations or speeches more creative or interesting?
I think that the most important thing is to be able to illustrate your ideas with stories, anecdotes, things we do need clear points and evidence that the points are true, but we also like real life stories. And I think that is the number one thing we can do. If you go to the National Speakers Association and try to become the public speaking champion of America, within that context of the National Speakers Association, you know, they spend an awful lot of time learning how to tell stories, relevant stories, stories that are short, compelling, and relevant to illustrate the points that you want to make.
Well, we all like listening to stories. I mean, yeah. We like to be read to. We enjoy stories. There's a dramatic element to stories. And if you look at the great public speakers of all time, they all used them.
Yeah, absolutely. And they still do. And even, you know, telling the story of American history, as Abraham Lincoln did, he talked about the past, the present, and the future. In 272 words in the Gettysburg Address, and that is the story of our country. So it's a very, very effective technique.
Do stories have to be personal to work?
Well, it's better if they're personal, and I think that the reason for that is that if you've lived this story, you have the vision of it in your mind so clearly and crisply that it has the ring of truth when you speak it. If you are using stories about other people from history or the celebrities or from the news, then you really do have to practice saying them so that you make them your own.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, each of us has a unique personality, the things that make us who we are. Sometimes that can get in the way. Sometimes we have to act. We have to behave in ways that maybe don't fit our personality in order to be successful as a public speaker. That can be a real problem for some people.
Yes, I think it's a challenge for most of us. That because we need a very high degree of conviction and purpose when we're speaking. I think to be a good speaker, you have to demonstrate, you have to show that you have a high degree of conviction and purpose on the stage. There was a great Irish poet named W.B. Yeats who said that, "I don't think anyone ever convinces us by force of reasoning, but rather because he or she is visibly enjoying the beliefs that he or she wants us to accept." In other words, do you have the look and feel of somebody who is full of conviction and passion? That's a hard thing to do for many people. As you know, you teach it too, so it's important, though.
Well, my late father was a salesman for quite a bit of his career, and he always used to say it's pretty tough to sell something that you wouldn't buy yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, if you're not buying it, and it's obvious you're not buying it, why should the audience buy it?
Yeah, and then to ask people who, you know, regular folks like you and me to sort of change their personal behaviors for the stage, for, you know, to be a good speaker, that's a difficult thing to do. But it may be just a slight tweak, maybe a little louder, maybe a little more energy, something like that. And you know what? We're all capable of doing it because, you know, we do have fixed traits. I think we have very few fixed traits. They're habits, perhaps. But we also have free traits. In other words, we are capable of behaving in different ways if the purpose of the behavior is strong enough for us. If the goal we're trying to achieve is important enough to us, we will behave differently if we choose to. But it can be scary, and it can be a little, you know, it's growth. It's personal growth. It's expanding your range of effective behaviors.
So we're selling an idea up there. What debt do we owe accuracy in the process of salesmanship?
Well, you owe debt to accuracy. What can you explain that to me, John?
Well, we want to sell an idea, but it's important that we tell the truth and that we are as accurate as we can be, isn't it? I mean, if we're giving facts, they need to be actual facts, not something we just made up before we stood up there to talk.
Well, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot if you ever lie to an audience. You know, the original definition of public speaking was a good human being speaking well. And if a good human being has ethics and treats people fairly and speaks to them with their best interest, with the audience's best interests at heart. So yes, if you're making up things, that is not a good thing for you or the audience.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. Are you afraid of public speaking, and do you have to give presentations anyway? So if you are afraid of public speaking and you have to give presentations anyway, how do you get through it? Maybe you found something that really works for you that you'd like to share with the rest of us. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org is the email address. And you can also find us on Facebook. Look for the Joy Cardine Show and leave your comment or question there. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, Sims Wyeth, I want you to talk about some things people do wrong physically when they're making a speech. What are we supposed to do with our hands anyway? Because that seems to be an even bigger question than how do I find all this information out there on the internet when I'm preparing my speech? What are we supposed to do with our hands, our face, our body? How should we stand? That kind of thing. I'd like to spend a little bit of time before we run out of time this hour talking about that. And then at some point, we need to talk about conclusions, because we've got one coming up in about 10 minutes or so. 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of WPR. Who's afraid of public speaking? Well, most of us are. Three quarters, according to recent surveys. Listed as our number one fear. We're talking about public speaking and what to do with all that fear if you have to make a presentation, with Sims Wyeth, author of The Essentials of Persuasive Public Speaking. Well, before the break, I said when we came back, we were going to talk about what do we do with our hands anyway, because that seems to be something that a lot of us really struggle with, what to do with various body parts when we're up in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
So what do we do with them?
Well, you know, I think you and I probably have the same experience. We see people trying to get better at public speaking, and they're clutching onto to a lectern, or they're putting their hands in their pockets, or they're holding them in front of their belt buckle, or putting them behind their back. And what that does is that all those things are gestures or signals to the audience that you're nervous, you're tentative, you're uncertain, you're afraid. And when you look that way, people are likely to discount your credibility, your authority, and not listen very well. So it's important that your body be full of purpose, as I say, or intention. And so when we speak in real life, I'm sure you know this, John, we gesture with our hands. Our hands are actually great allies of our speech. They are actually sort of an accompanying second language. We have the language of English, but we also have the body language. And body language supports the spoken words that we deliver. So it's very important to use your hands effectively and not hold on to yourself, but to use your hands to, in a sense, bring animate and enhance the impact of your spoken words.
Well, and of course, you also don't want it to be obvious that you've put in your notes, insert hand gesture here.
No, right.
And being on the radio, I don't have to worry about people actually seeing me. Everything I do on a day-to-day basis is done with the voice. But when you're in front of people, they can see you. And everything, every motion of your body communicates something, whether you want it to or not.
Right.
We can't not communicate, I guess, is the way to look at this. So
exactly,
what does this all mean for our everyday life? I mean, what's the application here?
Well, I think number one, the application is if you are meeting new people and you have a career, you have a job, and you want to make a positive impression, I think knowing how to handle yourself as a public speaker sort of bleeds into that. That you can look people in the eye when you speak, that your voice is expressive of your intention, and that your body says to people that I'm friendly, I'm open, and I'm a good person, and I'm easy to get along with.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Sandra in Madison who writes, what about PowerPoint? Why are PowerPoint presentations so hard to listen to?
Mm. Well, primarily, this is my opinion, primarily because they are often covered with bullet points, you know, with written language. And so the speaker is asking, so the speaker is using PowerPoint as a as sort of an exposed teleprompter for himself or herself. And it, you're asking their, then the audience at the same time to read and listen at the same time. And I think that is why it's so difficult. You know, for I would say 2,500 years since the ancient Greece, people have been speaking without PowerPoint and doing a pretty good job. So why I struggle with PowerPoint, too. I think there is some research being done at the University of California to try to put a finger on why this is true, why PowerPoint seems to actually undermine, in some instances, the ability of the audience to recall the information.
Yeah, and in a way that sounds counterintuitive. I mean, you would think that it would reinforce what you're saying, and like any good visual aid, it would be a memory prompt. But one of the things that that I found over the years is that for some people, it's more of a distraction. They're looking at the PowerPoint instead of paying attention to you.
Yeah, I think that's my experience too, and I think there are obviously you know, other circumstances. I know sometimes when you're presenting to scientist, one scientist is presenting to other scientists, they are also tuned in and interested in the topic that they'll put up with almost anything. But if you're speaking to a large, diverse audience, I think you've got to be very, very careful about how you use PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
There is evidence that the human mind is most focused when we are looking at an image that is being talked about by the speaker. In other words, we would rather have an image to look at and then have somebody explain what the image means and how important it is. It's very much like children's books.
Okay.
You know, when you have children's books, you have a big picture of an apple, and then you have an A, you know, for apple. There's very little text on the screen or on the page,
mm-hmm.
but there's a nice, big, juicy picture, which helps us grasp the idea.
Let's take a call from Lyman in Beloit next. Lyman, good morning.
Hi, good morning, John. Good morning to your audience. Good morning to your guests. I wouldn't call myself an accomplished public speaker, but I do believe it's a skill that I've been able to cultivate over time. And I feel like part of the reason for that, and it's very much by accident, I think, was my history of music performance. I feel like music performance, going really all the way back to grade school, has mm-hmm. helped to condition me a little bit for public speaking. And I wonder if your guest might discuss the overlap between music performance and public speaking.
Well, you sound like a very good public speaker, and any experience in front of an audience, whether you're a dancer or a musician, is very helpful because you get accustomed to being in front of all those eyeballs, and I think that's a great training. I was an actor when I was younger, and I think my experience in that field has also helped me. That's how I actually sort of came to my interest in public speaking. So any experience in front of an audience, it strengthens you. It gives you confidence as long as you keep working at it and understand that it's a simple kind of, I don't know, it's an art to be able just to stand there and engage with the audience.
We're starting to run out of time, and so it's time to actually conclude. What's the most important aspect of wrapping up a speech effectively?
The end of a speech, yes, as Churchill said, you know, the beginning and the ending need to are important, and you need to put those two things as close together as possible. I think you need to go back over the material that you've spoken about when you are speaking. Cover the main points that you've addressed using slightly different language so that the audience doesn't get bored hearing it said the same way. And then, of course, ask for action. In other words, speeches are delivered and presentations should be delivered in order to help an audience make a decision or a prediction and do something. So I would urge the speakers that listening to us to, you know, summarize what you said and review the challenges and the opportunities or whatever and the main points, and then ask the audience to do something.
ABC, always be closing.
Yeah, right.
And, yeah, I suppose coffee is for closers, too. Do you have can you think of right off the top of your head a brilliantly concluded speech, somebody who really did a good job of wrapping something up?
No, not off the top of my head. The Gettysburg Address is kind of like, you know, the DNA, I think, of all speaking. There was Lincoln saying we need to rededicate ourselves so that government of the people, by the people, and for the people will not perish from the earth. And again, that's a call to action, isn't it?
Hard to top that.
Yeah.
How can we, just in closing here, and we've got about a minute and a half or so left, how can we feel more confident? I've often told students, well, the more prepared you are, the more confident you feel, but sometimes if we're not confident in our material, or there could be a number of reasons, but what are some things we can do to make ourselves feel more confident? You talk about leaning downhill, leaning forward.
Mm. Yes, I think, well, getting committed to what you're going to say and then saying it with conviction, I think that's important. Visualizing yourself doing well. We tend to get into negative thinking and, you know, worry about, oh, I'm going to mess up. I'm gonna go blank, all that kind of stuff. My knees are gonna shake, and try to interpret all these. Nervousness as excitement. I just read another research project that when people are told to get excited when they have nervous symptoms, they do much better than if they try to calm down. In other words, don't try to calm down. Recognize that you've got a lot of adrenaline in your body. Get really excited about your topic, get really excited about doing well, and get out there and do it.
Well, as a performer, if you don't have even a little bit of nervousness before you go out, oftentimes you're just flat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you need that energy to sort of fill the room. I often like to say to my clients, you know, you need to be the locomotive that pulls the train of thought, and locomotives have a lot of energy.
Well, this locomotive is leaving the station. We're out of time. Sims Wyeth, thank you so much. It's been an enjoyable hour.
Thank you very much, John.
Sims Wyeth is president of Sims Wyeth & Company, an executive development firm devoted to the art and science of influence and persuasion. The title of his book is The Essentials of Persuasive Public Speaking. This program was produced by Christy Taylor, on-air production by Robin Cherry. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. Stick around, more to come. We're going to talk about whether or not Wisconsin should be the next state to legalize pot. That's coming up after the news.